Hi, everyone, and welcome to Remaking Tomorrow, a series of conversations about the future of teaching and learning. I'm Ryan Rudzeski, here with Greg Baer, and we're the co-authors of When You Wonder, You're Learning, Mr. Rogers' Enduring Lessons for Raising Creative, Curious, Caring Kids.
This is a podcast powered by Remake Learning, a network that ignites engaging and relevant learning in support of young people navigating rapid social and technological change.
And on today's episode, we're talking with Margaret Honey, President and CEO of the Scratch Foundation. Scratch is the world's largest creative coding platform for kids, and Margaret brings decades of experience to the work of nurturing the imagination and the aspiration of young people. Margaret, welcome to Remaking Tomorrow.
Thank you so much. I am really excited to be with both of you today and to have this conversation.
Margaret, we love having you here. Thank you. When we hear that word coding, I imagine most of us are immediately thinking about a computer scientist working at Google or some fancy tech startup. But that's not who's coding with Scratch, a coding platform designed for kids. So Margaret, paint a picture for us. When a young person hops on Scratch, what might their coding experience look like? What are they doing? What are they building? And most importantly, what skills are they developing?
Let me begin by telling you just a little bit about Scratch's history. So Scratch was created by Mitch Resnick at MIT's Media Lab. And what Mitch set out to do was actually not create a program that would teach or instruct kids in how to learn to code. What Mitch wanted to do was create and build an accessible, playful, joyful approach to coding that would allow young people to use code as a tool for their own creative expression. So very briefly, what kids see when they enter into the Scratch editor or begin using Scratch are a bunch of blocks. Think like digital Lego bricks. They contain within them code or syntax that allows you to build games and animations, create stories, imaginary worlds, all sorts of things. But it's a very intuitive, simple, accessible approach to getting kids started with the basics of coding. But what makes Scratch stand out, what makes it different, is Scratch centers kids' creativity, their agency, their curiosity. It's not instructing them like many ed tech products do. It's really saying, here, we have a playground. You go make and create what you're interested in doing.
And Margaret, you mentioned Mitch Resnick and the MIT Media Lab. Scratch is backed by decades of research. And I'm wondering if you could talk about some of the research that informed the platform's development, especially when it comes to, you know, what's the reasoning behind taking a joyful and playful approach versus a purely instructional approach?
I mean, there are many different ways to talk about the research that over decades has informed Scratch. But what I think it really boils down to is what Mitch and his team really wanted to ensure is that they were building a product that would center kids' agency, that would center their creativity and their curiosity. What creative learning kind of boils down to is giving kids a degree of autonomy and agency to make choices about what problems are important to them and enabling them to figure out, Mitch would say, tinker, mess around with, explore, figure out how to use the tools and resources available to them so they can solve problems that they care about. More broadly, in the educational work we do with young people these days, is that learning is in the process more so than the outcome. It's the process of what you are creating and building toward that is important. And, you know, in Scratch, that process is about problem solving. It's about collaborating with others. It's about iterating. It's about logical thinking and sequencing. All of those kinds of things are in evidence from a learning perspective with regard to what kids do with Scratch.
I love the way that you're describing Scratch. You know, we could focus on the coding and the learning of coding basics, which of course happens among the Scratchers. And you're describing something so much more, a place where I want to play. I can imagine those digital Legos and I'm tinkering and messing around and playing. It's a place where learners feel joy, they feel empowered to develop and share ideas, where they're connecting with others. It's so much more than coding. So I'm just curious, Margaret, can you share an example from a user or even an educator who's working with young people using Scratch? Something that they've said that stuck with you, a testimonial of sorts that drives you.
Every year on the platform on May 15th, kids celebrate Scratch's birthday. They make projects, they send messages, they create humorous, playful animations. And there was a kid several years ago who sent us this message, and I'll quote. He says, "Scratch, you're more than just a website. You're a universe of possibilities. From simple animations to complex games, you've been the catalyst for countless aha moments. Here's to you, Scratch, the canvas where creativity meets logic, where bugs become features, and when every line of code whispers, you can do this." I love this message because this user captures the essence of Scratch perfectly. And I think it's what he describes that has made Scratch so extraordinarily popular over the years.
I think that quote is beautiful. I love it. And it's so markedly different in so many different ways, different from the headlines we often read when we read about kids and technology and their learning. I think, you know, when adults think about supporting kids in the digital world, we're often concerned, and rightly so, about kids experiencing something negative, right? Things like cyberbullying or being left out, all sorts of controversy over cell phones and their role or lack of one in a classroom. Can you talk about what are the features of Scratch in your mind that support this positivity and this joyfulness for kids? And what might other platforms, other technologies learn from what Scratch is doing?
I think most importantly, Scratch centers kids and their interests and their curiosities. I think there is a huge difference between what young people are motivated to learn and what they're expected to learn. And Scratch doesn't show up as an environment that sets expectations about what you are going to learn. Scratch, as I said earlier, it's a creative playground. It's a tinkering sandbox where whatever you want to begin to experiment with is completely under your control. And one of the statistics that I often cite, well, comes from our user base. Schools have been important to the growth and spread of Scratch. But back to something you said earlier, schools have largely promoted Scratch as a program to teach coding. You know, we think that's great. But the interesting statistic is that of the children of our user base who discover Scratch in schools, 80% of them go on to create accounts at home. And I think they do that because they recognize, oh, this platform was created for me. I can do what I want with it. And I think that's sort of one of our most powerful data points because it really illustrates the ways in which we resonate with young people.
This is Greg Baer here with Ryan Rudzewski, and we're talking with Margaret Honey, President and CEO of the Scratch Foundation. Margaret, we've just introduced you again as the CEO of the Scratch Foundation, and you've held other interesting roles in leadership across your remarkable career to date. In fact, you were president and CEO of the New York Hall of Science, a researcher at a place called the Educational Development Center and the Center for Children's Technology, and you worked at Sesame Workshop, among other things along the way. So when you think about this learning landscape of which you have played a critical role, what is it that you've learned about learning itself as you've moved across these roles? What has changed and what hasn't?
When I first joined Sesame Workshop, we were sort of early in the business of creating educational software that would be compelling for young people. And one of my first assignments was to go off and talk to these guys who were running a software store in New York City. There were only three of them in the city at that time. Tells you how long ago it was, back in 1981. And we wanted to know what was popular with young people. And I was told, go buy whatever they tell you to buy. And we ended up collecting lots of different kinds of games, everything from, you know, your standard fare shoot 'em up games to art and design tools to fantasy role-playing games to mystery adventure games. We had a number of different genres. And the assignment that I had was to go off and work with some of my colleagues at a computer camp in Eastern Connecticut. And we set up these game-playing clubs so that kids could be our informants. And it was such a powerful experience because it taught me very fundamentally about the importance of centering kids. Again, back to these words, their curiosities, their creativity, as you think about designing for them. You know, it's interesting, Greg, you mentioned the New York Hall of Science, which pulled me into a very different kind of world that thinks non-negotiably, I would say, about how to center kids and their creativity, at least in the work that we were doing at the New York Hall of Science. And I know it's true for many children's museums and science centers all across the country and all around the world. And I mentioned that because that work kind of pulled me out of the ed tech world for a number of years. I was at the museum for 15 years. And returning to the ed tech world has been interesting because what I notice more than anything else is that in broad brush strokes, we've lost an aspirational vision for what technology can mean for young people. And I say that because I think we've gotten so focused on the language that I hear a lot is kind of remedying young people's deficits. We're going to fix the reading problem. We're going to fix the math problem. And we locate the fixing of that problem in this process of filling in gaps of students' knowledge. But you can hear in the words I'm using to describe this that kids have very little agency in that process. They're there to be fixed so that they can pass the tests and the schools can meet compliance requirements and all of that. I think that has been one of the biggest challenges that we face in education more broadly, that we've turned the wonderful, inspiring process of learning into something that is being driven by what I often call the authority of testing in the classroom. I worry deeply that we're going to deploy yet another technology in ways that we're not being thoughtful and intentional about how to center kids, their agency, their ideas, their passions in that process. And we're going to keep leaning into the remedying the deficits model. We've got to flip those things. We've got to lead with what motivates young people. What are they interested in? You know, we all know that if you give kids the space and support, they will do stunning things. We see it again and again and again. But in the aggregate, we're not making enough room for that to happen in our education system.
Margaret, we love this. The kids will do stunning things. And as you say, they're not there to be fixed. They're there to be loved. And our responsibility as adults is to find the brilliance in every single child. And Ryan, maybe we're held back by the pace of change and the pace of this future that seems to be coming at us and passing us and coming at us all the time, Ryan.
Yeah, I do have a question about that. I will say what the two of you just said probably could be this entire episode. It's what we're always getting at here on Remaking Tomorrow is making that space for that curiosity and that creativity and that joy. And yet, as you mentioned, Margaret, it is hard to make space for it, especially when you look at the pace of innovation, which can be dizzying. And I can say as a parent, sometimes overwhelming when I think about supporting my own kids. Do you have advice for adults, you know, whether they're parents or educators or caregivers or all of the above, people who balance so much in their lives already? Do you have advice for them? You know, how do they stay informed and ready to support the young people in their lives in the ways that you just mentioned?
We've learned a lot over the last decade about some of the really detrimental effects of social media. And, you know, I see in my friends who have young children or in family members who are raising younger children, the challenges that you allude to, which is it's incredibly difficult to figure out how to strike the right balance between a technology or technologies that are designed, really designed to be addictive, designed to keep you on at all costs, and other kinds of experiences that really open up creative learning opportunities for young people. And I think my advice to parents in this day and age is you should set real limitations around the use of technology that is being driven algorithmically, because it's the algorithms that are defining things. It's the algorithms that are shaping what kids see. It's the algorithms that are, in fact, taking away a lot of children's agency. It's delivering content to their doorstep, but in ways that sort of narrow the scope of what you're being exposed to. When I was at the Hall of Science in New York, we did an event with one of the co-creators of Siri, a wonderfully talented individual, and he gave a fascinating talk, and a member in the audience asked him, how did you get to be who you are? And he told this story. When my sister and I were young, one of the things our mom used to do is save cardboard boxes. And she'd throw them down in the basement, and then she'd send us down there and just say, go play. And we would spend hours building worlds, creating worlds, ripping up that cardboard, redesigning it. And it was such a powerful reminder of the importance of having the opportunity to play in ways that your imagination as a young person is given free rein, right? There are no algorithms dictating what he and his sister were doing in that basement, right? There was only possibility, and the possibility sprung from their imagining. And what I would say to parents is that those kinds of experiences that are not micromanaged, that are not algorithmically controlled and driven, are the really important currency of childhood and lay the foundation for a future in which young people can be innovative, creative, problem solvers, resilient, imaginative. Those very human capabilities are exactly the things that we need to preserve and protect and nourish and develop in this age of AI. We're going to have to get creative about the ways in which we make other kinds of spaces where our children get to exercise and develop and nurture their imaginative potential.
Margaret, we've enjoyed this conversation with you so much. And we're not done yet. We are going to wrap with a little bit of a lightning round where Greg and I are going to ask you some rapid questions. You can just respond with the first thing that comes to mind. Does that sound good?
That sounds good.
Favorite Sesame Street character?
Oh, Big Bird.
Most unusual exhibit at the New York Hall of Science?
Connected Worlds. It's about environmental systems and how they work collaboratively. When we were testing aspects of the exhibit early on, there was a little boy and somebody captured him on a video. He had just spent time in the exhibit working with it. He looked at the camera and he looked at it and he said, this exhibit makes me feel like I have superpowers. And I think, you know, that's what we want every kid to feel when they're doing something they love and when they're learning and when they're creating and making. We want them to feel like they have superpowers, that anything is possible for them.
Margaret, before we go, just one more question. What's one thing, maybe a superpower, that parents and educators can use or do today to make tomorrow a more promising place for every learner?
I would say create space for your kids that is, of course, safe, but where they have free time in an unsupervised way to create worlds, to make what they're interested in. And you can do it by throwing boxes in your basement, or you can do it by, you know, inviting kids to work with different kinds of materials, old sheets, old towels, old rugs, any kind of thing, and create imaginary spaces that they fill with their joy their ideas, their delight, and with each other.
Thanks again to Margaret Honey, President and CEO of the Scratch Foundation. Remaking Tomorrow is powered by Remake Learning. Learn more at remakelearning.org.